This is Lewis.
This is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
It feels a bit weird now. I'm on the left, you're on the right.
It threw me. I forgot to say hello at the beginning.
It's all wrong.
Dear.
Oh, God.
Not only that, we're kind of really leaning into the microphone.
Almost kissing.
Not quite. But it means that our voices, I think, are slightly, we're not sitting up properly.
Yeah, we've got a different arrangement today.
Posture's all over the place.
Oh, God, it's all gone wrong. Oh, dear. How are you, anyway? Have you seen any films?
No. Have you seen any films?
I have.
Well, okay, to be fair, I saw the film we're doing this week
recommended
doing it.
Well, that
podcast.
Counts. That
so,
counts.
Yeah. If we hadn't done this one, I would have just seen this film.
There we go.
But instead, I was like, I'll watch a film. Let's do a podcast. Save me watching any more films.
And here we are.
And here we are.
Well, I went to a screening yesterday.
Yeah.
See, it's not just you that gets to go to the fancy screenings.
No.
It was actually this film, I backed it on Kickstarter. Ages ago.
Why?
I think someone recommended it on Facebook. And I say, this film looks good. And I kind of looked at it and thought, it does look pretty good. And they were just basically, they needed a distributor. They'd made the film and they needed to distribute it. And they were like, but no one wants to take it, so can we get some money?
Oh, right.
And yeah, it was pretty good.
What did you get?
It was just to go and see the film, yeah.
Right, okay.
But it was great. I went to the cast and crew screening. The director was there. The cast was there. Phil Davis is in it, who is the kind of guy that you will have seen in loads and loads of things. Mm. And he's a great actor, but you wouldn't know his name. Kind of.
Well, he was in his main, most important role is in Quadrophenia, isn't it?
That's Phil Daniels.
Oh, no,
it's Phil Davis.
Who's Phil Davis?
I'll show you a photo later. You'll be like, oh, him!
Have you got a signed photo? Was he there?
He was doing a video thing, but Warren Brown was there. He was also in the film.
Who's Warren Brown?
He's that guy, you would know him. Just go and look him up. He's that guy.
Let's be honest, I'm never going to look either of these people.
Anyway, it was a pretty good film. Go and see it if you can.
Good.
Support British film.
Yes. Is it going to be the saviour of the British film industry?
Yes.
Yes, of course. Just another one to save another the British one. Film industry.
Anyway, this week we're doing Hannah and Her Sisters.
Yeah.
Which you saw last week.
I did, indeed. A film neither of us had seen before.
No, I've actually had it on my shelf to watch for a long time.
Mm.
So there was a good excuse to actually finally watch it.
Yeah, and I was given this by our friend Jason 18 months ago. I'm sure he gave it to me one birthday
or
Christmas.
So technically it's a recommendation from Jason.
Technically, yeah. Yeah, he bought me three 80s Woody Allen films to sort of... continue my Woody Allen education.
It's sick. There's so many of them, aren't there? It's like 40 odd films.
Oh, there's loads, yeah.
God, I've seen loads of Woody Allen films and I still feel like I've only seen a fraction.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. It's like Fall albums.
Exactly. Never get to the end. Never get to the end.
Yeah, very true.
You think you're there and then they just release more.
Yeah, I think one's due out next year. Exactly. Or I think he's already in pre-production for another one for next
Ridiculous.
Year.
Ridiculous. Please, no more.
Stop. Please, Mr. Allen, stop. Certainly in the early 2000s, there were lots of people saying, please, Mr. Sarah, stop.
Still, Midnight in Paris is pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's what everyone says.
Exactly.
So,
what's the pitch for this film?
The pitch? This is a film that lands firmly in the good half of the Michael Caine canon.
Ah, the Michael Caine canon. Now, he's an actor of...
50% shit, 50% brilliant.
Exactly.
That's Michael Caine.
So Michael Caine, CBE, as we should call him.
Right.
I mean, he's been in some amazing films and also some absolutely shockingly bad films.
Was he in The Bees? The film The Bees? Killer Bees? Is he in Killer Bees?
I wouldn't put me... I mean, I'm just thinking Jaws 4.
I was going to say, he was definitely in Jaws 4.
He really... He flies up and down the...
He just says yes.
He just says yes.
He just says
he
yes
say
to
no.
everything. I mean, if we'd asked him to come and do this podcast, he'd be like, oh, okay. What would you say the actual plot of the film is?
Well, unusually for a Woody Allen film, it revolves around the ladies.
Yeah, and he doesn't actually say, as I say, International Ladies Day rather than International Women's Day.
Exactly.
Oh, well, this is a very forward-thinking film focused on the ladies.
Hubba, hubba. No, it's about three sisters. One of them, whom used to be married to Woody Allen's character, is now married to Michael Caine's character, who's played by Mira Farrow, Hannah. And then her two sisters, who are all very different. They're all very different, aren't they?
Yeah.
Holly is the middle sister. She's kind of a bit flighty. had a bit of a cocaine problem, is now trying to find her feet, but is constantly borrowing money. And there's Lee, the youngest sister, who's more of the arty one, but also seems to be seeking a father figure as well.
Yeah.
So, and it's basically about the three of them and the relationships they have, particularly with Elliot, who's Michael Caine's character, with his liaison with the youngest sister.
Yeah, and there's lots of kind of little storylines going on, isn't there? But they all dovetail quite nicely at the end, don't they?
Exactly,
they kind of all come together.
It's like you said, it's just a lot of little tales that are kind of all interconnected. And yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliant film in the sense that there's so many characters in it, but you never feel like you're lost at all. You know, you feel like you're always in touch with what's going on.
It's often said to be Woody Allen's best film. Lots of people say that.
I would definitely put it up there, yeah, definitely. I mean, I still kind of have a soft spot for Annie Hall. But
yeah, I do as well. And I think probably Hannah and Her Sisters is a better film.
Mm.
But I think Annie Hall speaks to me more, so exactly. I prefer it. You know, technically, it's better directed, the storyline is stronger, the plot's more complex, but not in an obvious way. It moves at a good pace. It's just, structurally, it's a better film than Annie Hall, but there's something about Annie Hall.
And likewise, I found, Manhattan as well, another one of his great films. I didn't really warm to it as much as I warmed to Hannah and Her Sisters.
No, true.
I found Manhattan a difficult watch in places.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be, though.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's supposed to be not a great character.
No.
Even more so, I think.
That's the thing. In Manhattan, all of the characters are vaguely kind of unsympathetic. I didn't really root for any of them.
No, true, no.
In Hannah and Her Sisters, they're all great people, but they've all got their flaws, you know. Anyway, before we get too into this, let's go into the trivia quiz.
Okay. Okay, question one. The film is focused around family, and in America you can't get much more of a family occasion than Thanksgiving. How many Thanksgivings were there in this film?
Ah, right. I think it's three. Yeah, because they start with Thanksgiving and then they have one in the middle and then it finishes with one as well.
That's right, yeah. Three Thanksgivings. What's the plural Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving.
That's right, correct. Bonus point. Not really. Question two. John Turturro briefly appears in the film as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually just written and directed a new film starring Woody Allen as a pimp. What's the film called?
Oh. Is it Blue Jasmine?
let's do that film, Blue Jasmine. That's the sort of Channel 5 late night thing. And now on Channel 5, Blue Jasmine.
There are scenes of a sexual nature from the very outset.
Yeah! No, it's actually called Fading Gigolo.
Ah, Fading Gigolo. Oh, because I think there's two films coming up. That's one of the other ones.
Oh, really?
That was it was a 50
also 50. Written and directed by
Woody Allen. I don't know. There's two Woody Allen films coming out.
Okay, there are two Woody Allens. Right, and finally, Mia Farrow starred in the horror classic Rosemary's Baby. She also starred in a terrible remake of which 70s horror classic?
I'm going to guess Halloween.
Ooh, no, The Omen.
Oh.
She played the satanic nanny.
Right.
Whoa.
Okay, nice easy one. Question one. Harry gives Lee a book of poems, but who are they by?
Ooh. E.E. Cummings.
E.E. Cummings, that's right.
E.E. Cummings.
I always get E.E. Cummings confused with A.A. Milne.
Hmm. What does the E stand for?
Ecstasy.
Right. And Cummings?
Ecstasy Cummings.
Okay, excellent.
Question two. What film does Woody go to see at the cinema?
Part of the 101 canon. It is, in fact, Duck Soup.
That's right, yeah. I was pleased to see that on there. I was like, God, there's so many references in this film.
Two 101.
Two 101 films. Carrie Fisher's in it. She was also in When Harry Met Sally.
Indeed, yeah.
Max von Sydow's in it. He was in Wild Strawberries. Yeah. We did that a while back.
Wow.
Basically, this film...
Set in New York?
It's set in New York, like every other film. Okay, question three. Woody Allen has won the Best Original Screenplay Oscar three times. He won it for this film and two others. Can you name one of the other films?
One of the other films. It's not Love and Death, is it?
No!
No!
You're wrong!
Oh, no.
It's the other two were Annie Hall and Midnight in Paris.
I would have guessed, but to me, those felt too obvious guesses.
Too obvious.
Too obvious to go for the old, yeah. Yeah, that would have been route one. Surely not. Oh, well. So, enough of Woody Allen, Michael Caine.
Right, back on the Cainster. Yeah. Well, Michael Caine CBE, as we should address.
Sorry, Michael Caine CBE.
And if you would doff your cap as well.
Why hasn't he been knighted?
I don't know.
God,
maybe
surely.
Because of all those shit films he did.
I've seen Killer Bees.
Seen Killer Bees? Never gonna happen, Michael. Never gonna happen.
What?
She's gone a bit creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. He plays a very interesting character. I think we could probably talk about Harry. Is it Harry?
Yeah, it is Harry. Ah, actually, it wasn't Harry. It was Elliot. Sorry about that.
For at least half an hour.
Yeah.
We won't, but we could easily just chat about his motivations.
It's fascinating to see someone that's so kind of fatally flawed and the kind of flip-flopping he does halfway through the film. Just to give you some context, so Harry is married to Hannah in the film, but he lusts after her youngest sister, Lee. You know, he can't stop thinking about her.
In fact, the very opening... The opening monologue in the film is him just saying how much he loves Lee.
Just basically leering at her at a party. maybe a bit more poetic.
Poetic leer.
Essentially, leaning on a door jamb and just leering at her.
Yeah, yeah.
And he
just
kind of...
Just what you used to do at parties.
Well, yeah. We've all done it.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, we didn't lust after our wife's sister.
No, that's true. None of us are married.
Exactly. It's just a matter of time. So he, you know, he lusts after her, and he kind of, through various machinations, he kind of arranges to kind of meet her or randomly bump into her.
Yeah.
I'm using air quotes here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And eventually, you know, they do, without giving too much away, they do kind of hook
consummate
up.
Consummate.
It would be a bit of a dull film if they didn't actually hook up.
Yeah.
But and then afterwards he's racked with guilt. But in terms of his motivations, it's really interesting. It kind of raises that question of, just because you fall in love with someone, do you have to pursue that, you know? And I think for that point of view, it's really kind of an interesting question, particularly in terms of Woody's own relationship. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But I think it's very interesting. It shows a very weak character. Harry's very weak in the sense that he kind of only realises after he's actually kind of slept with Lee that perhaps it was just a fascination for him rather than anything real and concrete, and it's only afterwards that he realises that the concrete real love is what he has with Hannah.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the question, do you have to act upon your love for someone else? No, the simple answer is no, you shouldn't. Just walk out on
That's
your wife
thing. It's funny, isn't it, because you see so many films where it's like the character, he or she meets someone and they're just completely bowled over by them, and that's the only person they ever want, and they just want to be with them, whatever, at the cost. Which really doesn't happen very often in real life.
No, totally.
Even if it does happen, you know, if it's not the right person or not the right time or not the right circumstances, then quite often nothing will happen.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's easy to say, oh, he was just experiencing lust. I think he was experiencing more than that within the confines of the film. I think he felt that initial rush of love, but that initial rush isn't really love. That's a mixture of lust and excitement and newness. Well, what was interesting is at the beginning of the film, I watched this with my girlfriend, and the scene in the bookshop where Harry sort of gets himself, accidentally bumps into the, and then they go for a wander in a bookshop, and he sort of gives her the book of poetry. And I sort of just, oh, poor Harry. And my girlfriend was like, what are you talking about? He's trying to cheat on his wife. And I just said, he just looks pathetic doing it, though.
Yeah.
You know, there's not like he's... I said, it'd be different if he was this suave, kind of Casanova type, seducing his... I said, effectively, he is seducing his wife's sister, but there's a kind of...
Helplessness.
Helplessness to it. And
you know,
I just,
it's like a moth to a flame, isn't it?
I was just like, you idiot. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't like, oh, you bastard. I was like, oh, you just idiot.
Yeah, what you doing?
Yeah, I know. Like, and like knowing as well that there will be no future to this.
No, exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? It just shows Harry as just being a weak character, you know.
That sequence where he kind of gets into bed looking kind of slightly pleased with himself, And over the course of like a 2 minute, you sort of hear, yeah, like
his internal monologue.
Yeah, his internal monologue, and you sort of hear the internal monologues of several characters throughout the film. But you sort of see him kind of like half a smirk on his face when he sits down on the bed of his, yeah, Hannah's bed, his wife, faithful wife behind him, none the wiser. Mm. And he sort of has a half a smirk, and then slowly just sort of goes, the passion. And then suddenly goes, oh no, what am I doing? I'm an idiot. I'm destroying my life.
Oh God,
what's gonna kill me? Yeah, I thought that was quite. That sort of rung, well, not that I've ever been in quite Harry's situation,
no.
But the kind of that feeling of swinging wildly between joy and despair, of just thinking, you know.
Yeah, I guess in that kind of sense, it is quite reflective of the kind of swings and roundabouts of love, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, it is interesting because I wouldn't call it love in a way.
Mm. Yeah.
But I suppose it is, it's just a form of love. It's that kind of selfish, intense.
I think the Greeks had about 5 different words.
That's true.
Them,
yeah, that's very true. They did.
And I think we do well to kind of bring those back because it's not the same.
Is that so one of our films can do? Bring back the 5 definitions of love from ancient Greece?
We just have to learn the words in Greek.
And the actual, their meanings as well, which I suspect may have been lost to time.
But anyway, it's a fascinating character. It's a really... tricky and interesting portrayal that I don't think I've seen anything quite like it on the screen before.
And what, you know, I'm conscious that we've spent the entire time talking about the one male character in a film called Hannah and Her Sister. So let's flip it. Interesting, actually, in Mia Farrow's character, Hannah, in that the sense that she is constantly told to be, she's always at the centre of all these storylines. She's always told to be like, she's the thing that anchors, but bizarrely, she ends up being on the sidelines of pretty much everyone's story.
Mm.
Everyone's story kind of relates to her in some way.
It's very
interesting. But she doesn't really have... Until suddenly kind of really, all these stories come together and you sort of realise, oh, that's been Hannah's story.
Mm.
Just sort of the patchwork of everyone else's stories.
Exactly, yeah. You know, she's the linchpin, but at the same time, you take her for granted all the way through the film. She's just almost melds into the background in a way. But then that's very deliberate, you know, because all the other characters do exactly the same to Hannah.
Yeah.
They just take her for granted. They're like, oh, she's the talented one, or oh, she's always got it together. Hannah's always giving. She's never needing anything.
Yeah.
It's only really at the end that you kind of have an inkling of Hannah's needs and Hannah's wants. So, yeah, it's very interesting the way it's structured like that.
Especially as towards the end of the film, you really start to, like, just find Harry's behaviour abominable.
Yeah.
He's just being horrible.
Exactly.
Like, trying to... Doing that horrible thing that people sometimes do when they're in an unhappy relationship of trying to cause fights and acting distant, and then when the person says, why are you being distant? Like, oh, why are you crowding me? And that sort of thing. It's a horrible thing to do.
Exactly. It's difficult to watch, especially when you know she's just such an amazing woman.
Mm.
So, yeah, really cleverly structured film from that point of view.
Yeah, and what did you think of Mia Farrow's performance?
She was brilliant. I think, did she get one? She won an Oscar for it?
Oh, well,
I think she might have done. I don't know. I think Michael Caine did. But yeah, fantastic performance. In fact, all of the female leads. Yeah, I think playing Holly, was it Diane Wiest? I don't know how you say her name.
Wiest?
Yeah, she was fantastic as Holly. She's been in quite a few films. I've recognised her from Edward Scissorhands most of all. But, you know, she was absolutely brilliant. And Barbara Hershey, as well as Lee, was fantastic. What else has Barbara Hershey been in? I can't think. She's one of those actresses that I recognise her, but I'm not quite sure what she's been in.
Yeah. No, I don't know either.
I know Diane Wiest has been in lots of other Woody Allen films.
She has quite a memorable sort of face.
She's got that kind of high-pitched voice and the kind of... She's very squinty,
isn't she? Yeah, it's like half-closed eyes.
Yeah. But yeah, she's brilliant in this film. Yeah, I mean, in terms of female representations, it really does turn most Woody Allen films on the head, because usually it's all about Woody Allen's character being the central role, with the women kind of in the background or kind of supporting him. Whereas in this film, he's very much the comic relief.
He is. I mean, to be fair, like, his later films obviously aren't about that. They normally do have a kind of Woody Allen-type character in them. Yeah, you're right that this film, the Woody Allen-type character... played in this film by Woody Allen, is just the comic relief. He's the side character.
Mm.
Although he does get the last line in the film pretty much, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He made sure of that.
I suppose if you're the boss, that's what you do. Speaking of Holly, actually, that's one part of the film in chatting to, about it with my girlfriend afterwards, how the one bit that didn't quite ring true for us was the fact that Woody Allen's character, it's told in flashback, he was set up on a date with Hannah's sister after him and Hannah divorced. Right. And we're like, hang on, how have they never met?
Yeah, that was weird, that. So Hannah and Woody's character have been married for about 4 years.
Mm.
And yet she set him up on a date with Holly after they split up, which also to me is just weird.
Yeah.
I mean, if you divorce someone, would you set them up with your sibling?
Actually, just thinking about it, he does sort of say that he always had a bit of a crush on her, so I guess they must have met.
Mm.
But the whole date is almost acted like they have...
It was very strange.
Yeah, it felt like a blind date in the sense they didn't seem to have any idea about each other's interests.
Yeah.
Or any idea about each other, full stop.
Yeah.
But then he was like, oh yeah, but I always had a bit of a crush on her. I guess being the flighty character she was, perhaps she wasn't around much during their marriage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could say she seems to be jetting off and doing all sorts of different things all the time. So
yeah.
Maybe she hadn't met her that many times. But also, why would you set up your ex-husband on a date with your sister? That just seems
A bit strange.
Trouble.
Yeah.
That's just weird. So that was a bit that I really didn't get.
I suppose he does say something like, yeah, now we're divorced, we're just very good friends.
True. I mean, yeah. I suppose that's the ultimate giving thing of
yeah,
Hannah's character.
Well, true, yeah. I guess, you know, she just was like,
all the way through,
they're
saying she's so giving. Well, now she's giving him her sister. That's how giving she is.
And giving her sister her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose she's got Michael Caine. She's bagged herself the cane.
Although, in his crimped hair.
His crimped hair, his big glasses and his big oversized jumpers.
Exactly.
He wasn't quite the dashing...
he's not the kind of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels kind of Michael Caine.
That's your peak Michael Caine.
He's cutting a dash there. Either that or Zulu. I mean, running around the savannas in a uniform.
You can certainly tell it's a Woody Allen film. His kind of signature look and feel and scenes are all over this place, aren't they?
Yeah,
the exactly. The font, the music.
The font he uses in every film.
The,
I don't know what that font's called. I want to know now.
The Woody Allen font.
The Woody Allen font.
But the music, the kind of just little scenes of just people going about their business in cities.
He loves those establishing shots.
Oh, and, yeah, especially of New York.
Yeah, and it's a New York film
as well.
Another New York film. I think about 50% of the films we've done for Anjouan films are actually based in New York. But yeah, I mean, it's beautifully directed film. I mean, like I said earlier, it kind of keeps the pace up beautifully all the way through. You know, you never feel lost. And I like the way it kind of divides everything into segments, you know, with place cards in front. Obviously where Frasier got it from years and years later.
Obviously, yeah. Obviously. I suppose it is, yeah.
Even the same font, I think, or almost.
Or pretty much, yeah, very close to that. Yeah. Yeah, very true. I would certainly say this is, of the Woody Allen films I've seen, and I've not seen that many, but this is certainly the best directed.
Mm, definitely.
He's really come into his own here.
Yeah, you can see, if you watch some of the earlier ones like Love and Death or Bananas, you know, it's a world away from Hannah and his sisters.
Yeah, even Annie Hall.
Even Annie Hall, yeah. Which, as much as I love it, it was a little bit rough around the edges.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
Some scenes that seem to go on for a bit too long and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's an efficiency to the film here.
Which you have to be efficient when you've got so many characters in a film.
Yeah.
But it never feels like you're going to get to know each of them equally, which I think is the amazing thing about it.
The only slightly jarring thing I found was the internal monologues.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. Perhaps I felt that's almost like a too easy. What's this character thinking? Let's just have them here. Let's have it hear their thoughts.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I think some of the monologues had some of the best lines in them as well. So
yeah, true.
I kind of wouldn't like to do without them.
I think, to be honest, it's more... I think it was the first monologue of Lear's you hear. After you have the opening monologue of Michael Caine, then the party, and you see Lear going home. And I think Harry fancies me.
Yeah.
I was about, is this the whole film going to be told in this way?
Yeah, I know what you mean. In fact, that monologue was probably one of the weakest.
Mm.
Just in sense it didn't add a huge amount to it.
No, just more just pointing out what we already knew.
Mm.
But as you say, some of the monologues do contain the best lines, but I don't know. It's... It's just too easy.
Speaking of monologues, Max von Sydow has a brilliant monologue halfway through, where he's just talking about the TV. Where it's like, imagine the mind of the man who watches wrestling. Just this great thing. It's like, he starts talking about this program he watched about Auschwitz on the TV, and he's like, the big question is, why didn't it happen sooner? You know,
why doesn't it happen more often? You know? Yeah.
And, you know, he's got some fantastic lines in the film. And he's just such an amazing presence. Even when he's just moaning about TV.
I don't know about you, but when I watched him moaning about the TV, I was like, my God, I kind of sound like that already. What would I be like in 20 years? I'll be just like that.
I'll tell you what, your orator is nowhere near as good
No,
as
No, that's very true. I wouldn't be quite so eloquent. But, oh dear. It did make me think, oh no, I'm just going to be exactly. This grumpy old man.
You there, with your half-moon specs, peering over the TV times, flapping your big arms around.
My 22-year-old artiste girlfriend wandering around. Exactly.
Probably in just knickers or something.
After cheating on me, of course.
Yeah, and watching X Factor. Oh, what a life ahead.
Can't wait. He's, I mean, that scene though, with
the breakup scene.
Yeah.
When
he breaks up with Leah. That's probably the most powerful scene in the film.
It's amazing. Apparently the crew gave a standing ovation after they finished it.
It's not just what he says, it's his entire body, the language. Just when he slaps the table in just anger, frustration, despair.
Mm, brilliant.
And kind of rubbing his eyes. It's just absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it makes me want to see more films of him now.
That's one thing about the film, actually. Just showing kind of like different relationships at different stages and sort of showing Hannah's parents. Yeah,
they're great, aren't they? Apparently that's Mia Farrow's real-life mother.
Oh, really? Yeah. But, I mean, like, the whole point that the fact that her parents have a shaky marriage as well and rely on Hannah as well to sort out their arguments.
You can see everything just revolves around Hannah.
It's quite a touching relationship, actually. It's the fact they've kind of... They have these kind of massive rows about, down to his alcoholism, also her alcoholism and... Apparently her flirtation, although she claims that he's
vapid.
Yeah, vapid.
What did she say?
He's a
haircut masquerading as a man,
or something like, or a haircut, or a he's a haircut of an excuse of a man, or something like that. It's very good line. But that going back to what we're saying about to move on to other people, to there's the sense that they love each other, they have these moments. And they have moments where they can barely live with each other, but they love each other. And when you see them at the Thanksgiving dinners and they're kind of singing their songs, it's actually quite sweet.
Mm, that's it, yeah. They've got moments of real togetherness.
Yeah. And then it's just bizarre just to see the kind of an old couple just having a screaming row.
Yeah, that's
you don't, it. It's something you don't really see on television depicted in films.
No. Anyway, would you recommend the film?
Yeah, definitely. My only slight negative thing, I wasn't overly fond of not to ruin it too much, but there's a kind of happy ending. And apparently I did read that Woody Allen originally wanted a more kind of either sadder or more ambiguous ending, and the studio recommended against it. That's the only thing that kind of stuck out a little bit for me, but the rest of the film, more than makes up for that.
I think I disagree with you on the ending. I thought it was a really great ending, but I know what you mean. It's kind of, in some ways, perhaps a little trite. I think it's great. Go and watch it. Definitely one of his best films.
And I think if you're a woman, if you're a woman with two sisters, or a woman who comes from perhaps a family of lots of sisters and lots of girls in the family, I think this will have another edge to it. A certain power to it.
Or if you're a philandering husband.
Yeah.
Anyway, our secret sponsor for this week.
Yeah. Yeah, probably someone who doesn't really need our support or encouragement.
Well, we thought, seeing as we're doing a Woody Allen film, we should have a sci-fi magazine as a sponsor. It fits.
To be honest, we're a bit grumpy this week about our secret sponsors because we put it out there. Onto it. Every so often, we tweet, and every single week,
at least one tweet a week,
we'll get a couple of followers, and I'll be like, ooh, we're almost on 250. And every single week, for every two or three followers we get, like two or three leave. We are stuck on 245, just all the time.
I know. To be honest,
it drives me crackers.
To be honest, it really doesn't bother me that much. But Ian, I mean, you should see this steam coming out of his ears.
I want to get above 250.
We need to get above 250. Just, if anything, to give me some peace of mind.
The Central Line has much more followers than us.
Central Line.
The Central Line, yeah.
Well, you know, people need to get a power.
That's
right?
True. I mean, that is actually quite a useful service to help follow the Central Line. But even so, it is still annoying.
What? Does the Central Line have more followers than the Northern Line, for example?
Yeah, I don't know. That would be quite interesting to compare. But, yes, anyway, so this week...
This week, it's SFX Magazine.
Yes.
Which is at SFX Magazine on Twitter. You're a fan, aren't you, of SFX?
I used to buy it.
Oh, don't say that.
It's our secret sponsor,
you know. I mean, bigging them up.
I do check the website, so yes, okay. It is good. All yeah,
right.
It
well, was that's always, the way things are going.
To be
now,
honest,
anyway.
It was always quite well written. The only reason I stopped buying it was just because I was buying too many magazines. I was finding I was not reading them. That's the only reason I didn't buy it.
Did you hear the editor of SFX Magazine? He would buy it. I mean, I might buy it as well, but, you know.
You used to read my old copies when we lived together
and
I would buy it.
I did.
Yeah. This is a ringing endorsement for SFX Magazine.
Buy SFX Magazine. It's pretty good, we think.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Well, it used to be, but it probably still is.
It probably is.
Yeah.
The website's good. Look at the website.
Yeah, exactly. The reviews on the website.
No one buys magazines anymore. Come on.
Come on. Print media's dead.
Yeah. Anyway, so if you've got any films for us to watch, please write to us at 100films you should have seen@gmail.com.
Like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter, both 101films.
And you can look at our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com. And also, while I think about it, I've had a separation on my shelf since February. And I can't remember who recommended it, but they recommended it about a year ago.
Right, okay.
And just apologies. We do get round to watching the films eventually. It just takes us a very, very long time. So please write in with your recommendations.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think for a separation, an Iranian film about a divorce, you really have to be in the mood for that.
Oh, God. When is there a time to watch a subtitle film about divorce that's 2 hours long?
Yeah. Especially when you could just watch Back to the Future again.
Exactly. Hour and 30.
Perfect. Okay, right. Bye.
Bye.
Apparently, there was a movement to get Woody Allen awarded the Pulitzer for this, the screenplay of this film. Yeah.
It seems odd.
I mean, it didn't go
Isn't
anywhere.
Isn't that for journalism?
Yeah, I don't...
I think Lois Lane won that year, didn't she?
She did, yeah.